This is beginning of ordinary time again. So we're back to our continuous reading of a gospel this year, Mark. We pick it up towards the end of chapter 4. And we haven't done it since before Ash Wednesday. So you and I have probably all sort of lost touch with where we are. I think, therefore, the thing you want to do is sit down this week and read the first four chapters. Take you all of 10, 12 minutes. But read the first four chapters and catch up. See the sweep of the gospel to this point. After an introduction and a typical day, some indication that there will be controversies in this as we go, Mark begins to show in detail Jesus' announcement of the kingdom in word and in deed. The whole first part of chapter 4, well, almost all of it, the first 34 verses of a 41-verse chapter, is the sermon in parables. Now, obviously, this is important to Mark because he doesn't quote Jesus very much. You only get two extensive quotations in the whole gospel. And this here in chapter 4 is one of them. It's the parables that announce what the kingdom is about. And the parables that are the breaking of the door for the kingdom to get in. This is the beginning in word of the proclamation. And then you get a thorough, systematic beginning indeed. We have this story, and then the story about the Gerasene demoniac, which we will skip, actually, and then the sandwiched stories of the woman with the hemorrhage and the daughter of the synagogue official, which we'll read next week. All those together show a steady progression. Jesus is indeed, as well as in word, rolling back the forces of chaos, the forces of unfreedom, the forces of oppression in nature, in demonic possession, in illness, and even in death itself. So that's the section in which we find ourselves. This is the first of a series of mighty deeds that will correspond to the parable's mighty words. You can imagine this. This is a nice little story to imagine. They recovered, 10, 20 years ago, a boat from the Sea of Galilee from that period. So we know what fishing boats looked like in those days. Imagine it about 28, 30 feet long, about 10 or 12 feet in beam. Would hold about 12 or 15 people, or an equivalent number of fish, depending on how lucky you were. Caught too many fish, you had to throw some of the crew out to make room for them, but that was okay. The boat had a high platform in the stern where the helmsman would stand to work the tiller. High, higher than the rest of the boat, not modern ship high. And it's on that tiller platform, or maybe under it, that Jesus is curled up asleep when the storm hits. Even to this day, there are frequent sudden storms on the Sea of Galilee. I mean, it's not big enough to qualify as a major sea, but it's big enough to produce some interesting weather. Well, they're terrified. And they're hollering out, "What's the matter with you? How can you sleep through this? Don't you care that we're going to get ready to drown?" Jesus, it says here, woke up. Actually, the Greek is more like stood up fully. It's a word to raise up with a prefix on it that intensifies it. So you can imagine Jesus not just sort of rolling over and rubbing the sand out of his eyes, but standing up all the way on that platform in the stern in the midst of the squall, fairly dramatically stretching out his arms and saying, "Quiet, be still." Fairly dramatic picture. And it stops. There's a great calm. There was a great storm, a great swell, and now there is a great calm. And then he turns to the disciples. Why are you terrified?
What do you mean, why am I terrified? Did you see what was going on here?
Why are you terrified? Don't you yet have faith? Well, that's an interesting question. Don't you yet have faith?
And what does faith have to do with whether or not you're going to be terrified in a squall like that?
Helps us explore the question of faith, doesn't it? And faith is certainly important for Mark. We see faith growing in Mark, understanding of who Jesus is growing in Mark. But this is not the time for that yet. At least here they are starting to ask the right question.
After that, they have a different kind of fear and awe. They are filled with a great awe and said to one another, "Who is this whom even wind and sea obey?"
They're starting to ask the right question. This is implicit Christology, the scholars call it. Jesus doesn't tell you who he is. The author doesn't tell you who Jesus is. But figuring from who else could say this or who else could do that, and start working on an answer to the question. So they're asking the right question. Who is this? Even the wind and the sea obey. But it'll take four more chapters before they get even halfway home. Chapter 8, Peter has it half right. You're the Messiah. But it's not till the very end, under the shadow of the cross, when the commander of the execution team can come to a full faith and say, truly, this man was the Son of God. So he's not criticizing them, I'm sure, for not having him figured out yet. They're just beginning that process, and they're proceeding along the right track. What is it then that they don't have? Intellectual precision is probably not it. It's other things to faith. One of them, a big one, is trust. Don't you trust me yet? Don't you trust God yet?
Don't you realize that God has started us out on something, and God is surely not going to let it be short-circuited this early on?
Have faith. It doesn't mean
believe the right stuff. It means have more trust.
And that's something we need to look at, too. Because we have moments like that, don't we? I mean, you've probably never been in a small boat in a violent storm. Maybe some of you have. Not many of us. I haven't. But we've all been through moments like that, haven't we? We've all been through times when you're really just literally down in the gut, terrified. Why are you terrified? Don't you have faith? Well, you can go to the other extreme from that and think, well, faith is sort of the big security blanket. And if I really trust God, I can do anything and escape the consequences of it. And I wind up out in the vestibule, flat on my tail. Faith doesn't mean that God will protect us from the consequences of our actions, or other people's actions, for that matter. Having faith, having trust, doesn't mean that you won't suffer. Doesn't mean that you won't suffer improperly, unnecessarily, unjustly. Jesus certainly did. Why shouldn't we? What then does it mean? Maybe that God will not go away. That whatever happens, God will be with us. And if God is with us through it, then why are you terrified? Why are you terrified? If I am with you in the midst of this, if I am with you through this, I am with you all the way to the other side of this, no matter what, then why are you terrified? Maybe that's the question we should be asking. God's faithfulness to us is such that there's never any reason for terror. The ship may encounter the storm. The ship may go down in the storm. But we'll still be all right. because God does not go away. This is the kind of faith that Mark is pointing out here. Not that they have Jesus all figured out, that they know who he is and profess the creed properly, but they trust. That they trust that Jesus, who is already beginning to be and should be by this time thoroughly for them, the sign, the symbol, the sacrament, the embodiment of the presence of God, will not go away. And therefore, whatever happens, they will be all right. This is faith. Faith is not just believing. Faith is believing in and being believable in. It's faithfulness. We make the distinction in English. Sometimes the variety of words that we have in English is very useful and enables us to be very precise. Sometimes it does more harm than good because we're so precise that we get things off in pigeonholes. And we think of faithfulness as one sort of thing, faith as another sort of thing. Languages that draw all of that together into one big word, they have a harder time pinning down exactly what they're saying. But at least they know it's all related. And it's surely all related here. The reason to be terrified is not that we may not have Jesus precisely professed, but that we may not trust in Jesus enough. And the reason not to be terrified is not that we're sure we're right. I'm always a little bit afraid of people who are too sure that they're right.
But that we are sure that God will not go away. That God's faithfulness will be with us through anything. Think about it. Think about it now. Because you may not have time except to reach back and grab something you've already thought about when the storm comes up. When the winds begin to blow and you begin to get terrified. So think about it and pray it through now. So that when that does happen, you can say to yourself, why are you terrified? Don't you yet have faith? It's a good resource to have in your back pocket when the time comes.